Eu cópia.
Dr. Sadlick, Dr. Sadlick?
I don't think anybody's popped in saying that they were here yet. But Dr. Campbell's here. Yeah,
here, this is Diva.
It's the suspect.
Dr. Sadlick, are you with us? Hi, Dr. Sadlick. Would you like me to take roll?
Yeah, let's see if everyone's back.
Okay. Dr. Sadlick?
Yeah.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Here. Yeah.
Ms. Gallen?
Yeah.
Dr. Campbell?
Here. Yeah.
Dr. Spatt?
Yeah.
Dr. Rubin?
Yeah.
Okay. We have quorum.
Okay. We have quorum. And it's 2:03. We're back in session. I believe we left off on number 6, review consideration and possible action regarding the application for medical license.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, this is Justin. Just really quick, I know that you had mentioned earlier when Dr. Rubin announced his refusal on items 5A and 5B that those matters would likely be continued, but given that they were agendized for today, I would just recommend that the board, somebody make a motion, one of the board members make a motion to continue both agenda items 5A and 5B to a later meeting and hold a vote.
Okay. So let's digress to number 5A, which is case. Is it okay if I take them separately for you?
You could do them separately or together. If it's going to be the same motion, then I it might be easier just to do them together.
Let's go ahead and do 5A and B, and that was case number 21187. And the next case is 21202. And I'll make a motion that they get agendized to a different date, calendar to a different date. So could someone second that for me?
Dr. Campbell will second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Okay. Let's go back up to number 6. Review consideration of possible action regarding application for medical license. So both 6A and B are medical licensees. And, could you go ahead and tell us a little bit about 6A?
Sure. Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, this is an application for naturopathic medical license. The applicant is Jacob Quesada. He graduated from Southwest College 6/18/2021, and applicant has passed all required NCLEX examinations. Applicant did disclose an incident which took place on March 6, 2020, resulting in a DUI charge and misdemeanor conviction. Applicant has supplied the board with the plea agreement, court papers, along with the evidence of completion of the court-ordered education activities.
And is Dr. Bassano on the phone?
Yes, I'm here.
Can you give us a little bit of background?
Absolutely. So as Ms. Gale told you on March 6th of 2020, I did receive a DUI driving home from the bars. I made a terrible judgment call, given that I don't live very far. And I understand that is no excuse whatsoever. I was fully cooperative with the law enforcement involved. There were no injuries, damage, property life, nothing of that sort. I completed all of the judge-appointed counseling classes and ignition interlock device in my vehicle for the time required, and there were no complications or delays with any of my requirements. It was the worst decision I've made, in my personal opinion. I'm highly remorseful from it, and yeah, it'll never happen again.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Dr. Campbell, can I start with you? Any questions for him?
Yes, thank you. Dr. Quesada, can you hear me?
Yes.
Since turning 18 years of age, is this the only law enforcement contact that you've had?
Yes, I've gotten one red light traffic warning, but it was up in Flagstaff and there was ice, so I didn't really have a way to stop my vehicle, but I did run the red light because of that.
Okay, and in your opinion, do you have any type of issue with alcohol, dependence,
no,
et cetera? Okay. All right. Now, Mr. Chairman, I have no other questions.
Dr. Rubin, questions for him?
Hi, this is Dr. Rubin. Dr. Seda, how will you, if you will, then how will you use this experience as a physician?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, ever since that incident, I've taken our alcohol and drug screening very seriously as a student prior to my graduation, and it's kind of opened my eyes to the mental health and coping aspects that patients tend to use these substances in, and especially with last year, or the events of the last 2 years, actually, it's been more prevalent. So using my experience has helped me to kind of allow for more empathy and compassion for patients who may be going through something similar. So, the awareness of it absolutely within my mind.
And was the decision that you made, looking back on it, was it impulsive?
Lots of judgment. I mean, I utilize public transportation, safety, of course, whenever needed. And it was a misjudgment with the short distance that I believe I had to go in order to get home.
Got it. How long have you been practicing?
I'm not currently practicing. I'm employed by Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine, but I'm not practicing.
Just for your licensure. We obviously, I don't know how long you've been on this call, but this is like the third case that said it, where we take an oath to protect the public.
That's
why you would get a license. And obviously, I'm sure you're aware that going out and driving, inebriated, under the influence, you're not protecting the public. I'm asking about impulsivity is because, I'm guessing you understand this, but if you haven't practiced it, you don't have any experience with it, but, you're going to make decisions, and some of those may require you to really think on your feet, and, we don't want you to make an impulsive decision, because we don't want to find you back here on the board because of another decision that you made that you're going to look back and say, this one was now the worst decision that I made. So I guess it's fine that it only affected you, and maybe this will make you a better doctor in some way. I don't have any further questions. Thanks for answering those questions.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Rubin. Dr. Scott, do you have questions?
No, I don't have any other questions. Thank you.
Ms. Gallen and Ms. Tippett? Gallen, we'll start with you first.
You know, I mean, I don't have any other questions at this time.
Ms. Tippett?
No questions.
Dr. Posadas, what's your goal once you receive your licensure?
I am a resident physician over at the Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine, and I will be doing the regenerative medicine residency program with them. More specifically, or?
So you're going to be teaching or assisting in some of the degenerative therapeutics?
Yes.
Infections, et cetera?
Correct.
And then when do you start that up?
I started in October, but my role right now has pretty much just been shadow and observation. So I'm not supervising any students. I'm not overseeing procedures, administering any medications or supplements by any means. I'm employed and basically just learning at this time. And my duties will carry forward should I receive my medical licensure after this agenda.
Okay. And you're aware, and obviously you have been because you've been dealing with stress before, that dealing with students third year, fourth year is going to be stressful. And so it sounds like you've gotten some type of coping mechanisms in there.
As far as my own personal?
In terms of dealing with stress in general.
Yeah, I mean, I've had to learn many different natural therapeutics and coping mechanisms that, you know, worked for me. So I find myself to be very, very good at teaching and helping people with stuff that I've gone through. So yeah, we've already been dealing with some stressful events at school, and I seem to be managing them very well and assisting as needed. With the students.
Okay. So, board members, if there's no other discussion, then I'll make a motion that we accept his application for medical licensure.
Mr. Chair, members, is it to approve the yeah. application?
Yeah, for approval.
Dr. Campbell seconds that motion.
Okay.
Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Yes, sir.
Motion carries.
Good luck to you.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much to everyone on the board. I really appreciate it.
Take care, Jacob. Good luck. Let's move on to number 6B, and that would be Laura Rubus. And Gail, could you give us a rundown? I think this is a transfer from those.
Yes. Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, this is an application for medical license by universal recognition. Applicant is Dr. Lori Rubialis. She holds a license as a naturopathic physician in the state of Oregon, and she was originally licensed on 9/24/2001. The license is set to expire on 12/31/2021. Applicant graduated from NUNM on 6/24/2001. She took and passed all the NPLEX examinations required by the to be granted licensure in Oregon, including homeopathy and minor surgery. The acupuncture add-on was not required for licensure in Oregon and was not taken. Applicant does, however, hold a certificate from the National Certification Commission of Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine and has applied for license with the Arizona Board of Acupuncture. Based on statute, the applicant does meet the requirements for license via universal recognition. However, there is a question relating to the pharmacology scope. The applicant graduated from NUNM in 2001. The pharmacology component of NPLEX was not updated until 2005. Applicant has not taken the updated version of NPLEX, nor has she taken the NPLEX pharmacology add-on. Applicant practices in the state of Oregon. She has prescriptive ability pursuant to Oregon prescribing authority, and I have attached that to the board memo. The board must determine if the prescribing authority is at the same practice level as Arizona's pursuant to the licensure by universal recognition.
Is the applicant on the phone?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Okay.
I've also had a DA license since July of 2016 and have done lots of pharmacology training to be renewing my license each year in Oregon since 2001.
Is your DEA current?
Yes, it is.
So, Dr. Rubin, can I start with you?
Sure. Dr. Rubin here. You know, I don't know all the particulars.
To my knowledge, as I engage with my Oregonian colleagues, I believe there's a broader prescriptive authority in Oregon than here regarding IV therapy. And I thought it was equivalent in terms of I guess the DEA certificate would be equivalent. I don't know what she's allowed to do for DEA. For me, if they're equivalent, I don't know what would be the big deal if she would need to take the exam. If Oregon didn't make her, then I would need to do so. She's been prescribing for 20 years. And has satisfied all her CME and farm, which if it satisfies CME for farm here in AZ, and the equivalencies are the same, I would see a reason to through an NPLEX update just because she moved to a different state that has equal or reduced farm allowances.
I appreciate that. Yeah, Oregon is one of the most extensive formularies for naturopaths in the country, from what I understand.
Dr. Bubiales, what's your C2 abilities in Oregon?
C2, you mean controlled substances?
Yeah, your C2 drugs, i.e. your Vicodin, et cetera. Are you allowed to do those medications?
We are. I can also do benzodiazepines.
Right, that's C3.
I've had Yes. So I don't do them that often, but I do sometimes I find people just need to be weaned off, or they need somebody who, you know, will let them have a taper or just be more conservative with the medications. I sent some patients to psychiatry and they have been over-medicated. That was part of my decision to get a DEA license. I treat a lot of patients with pain with acupuncture. So I resisted getting one, even though I could for a long time, because I didn't want patients drug seeking. But after a while, when I saw my patients over medicated by other providers, I saw the wisdom in having it to use short term for patients.
And do you have the psychostimulants on your C2, such as Ritalin, Adderall?
You know, they might, I think they are, but I don't prescribe them personally.
Okay.
I keep people Tricnadol, you know, I keep people Ativan if he's going through a crisis and can't sleep, but I'm not. I defer to psychiatric nurse practitioners for the stimulant medication personally. I mean, I treat a lot of people with mental health issues and a lot of my patients are on them. And I know quite a bit about them, but I like them managed by a psychiatric nurse practitioner.
Okay. And my last question for you, and then I'll turn to the rest of the board, is what's your goals? Where are you heading? What are you doing?
I am in Sedona, Arizona right now. I'm starting a clinic named Sedona Holistic Medicine. And my goal is to establish a practice here with, you know, I've done intensives where people have come to Portland from out of state when they're going through a challenging time or a stressful time. And I do a good holistic workup and give them 4 acupuncture treatments in 5 days and send them home with a longer term plan based on functional medicine and their diagnostic workup. And I'm hoping to recreate some of that and also establish patients here. I rented a space next to Whole Foods in Sedona. So I'm looking, it's getting built out at the moment. So I haven't advertised for it or anything.
Other board members, Dr. Spath, Dr. Campbell, Ms. Tippett, Ms. Gallen, any other questions?
This is Dr. Spath. I don't have anything to add. Congratulations, I'm sure we're going to hear from you from Sedona and see all the good things you do for the people up there.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. I am one of the. Mm-hmm, go ahead.
Dr. Campbell, do you have anything?
My questions were already answered with respect to prescribing similarities, and I appreciate that. And that's all I have. Thank you.
And Ms. Tippett?
Welcome. No questions. Thank you.
Okay. And Ms. Gallen?
No questions here either. Thanks.
So I'll make the motion that basically we're going to give Laura Rubialis a license to practice medicine here in Arizona.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Dr. Campbell.
Can I get a second?
And Dr. Sadlick, this is Gail Anthony. Dr. Sadlick, was that a motion to approve the license or to approve the application for licensure?
Yes.
Okay. And Dr. Campbell, was that a second?
Yes, ma'am. A second.
Thank you. Okay. I will do roll call. Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spath?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Yeah, that's fine.
Motion carries.
All right.
Thank you, Gary. I really appreciate
it. Good luck to you.
Thank
you. We're all busy you and Sedona.
Yes,
just need
to look
it
up. Okay.
Bye-bye. Hey,
guys,
just put your
name in.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We'll move bye-bye. Let's move on to number 7. Application possible action regarding this is for medical assistance. This is 7A. Elizabeth Tierney, and if you could give us a quick rundown on her deal.
Sure. This is an application for medical assistant. Applicant completed the Arizona Technical Training Institute graduation on 8-12-2001. Applicant indicated 2 affirmative background answers on her application. Source documents indicate an arrest on 7-22 of 2016. Date of offense was 6-18-2016. The charges related to DUI, extreme DUI, and drug metabolite. Applicant has supplied copies of the plea agreement and completion of sentencing requirements relating to the 7-22-2016 arrest.
Is Elizabeth on the phone?
Elizabeth is here.
Hi. Dr. Campbell.
Hi.
Any thoughts from you?
Mr. Chair, members, this is Justin. I just, you know, going back based on prior practice, I don't know if the board wanted to give Ms. Tierney a chance to just sort of address the board generally.
Anything you'd like to say to the board?
Sure. Well, I'm really excited to start working at Arizona Natural Healthcare as a medical assistant. I did have that incident, which I was arrested and charged with reckless driving because all of those charges that officer applied to me were incorrect. But I did the education and I followed through, and it was a really horrible experience. But I do have to say that some really great things happened because of it. So as awful as it was, some wonderful things came out of it.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Campbell, questions or thoughts?
Yes. So one thing that just caught my attention, you said that some of the charges that were applied to you were incorrect. Is that what happened?
Yeah, like saying that I was on drugs and things like that. I mean, they did a lab draw. I had been drinking. They didn't have a reason to pull me over. And that's why I got the reckless driving instead of a DUI. But all those drug charges that they added on there, I don't know why. My lawyer said, well, they can charge you with whatever they want, so that's what they do. I don't know if that's true, but that's what I was told. So all of those were dropped.
I see.
Because I had no drugs in my system.
And how long ago was this?
It was 2016.
June of 16. And since then, have you had any law enforcement contact?
No.
And do you consider yourself to have any dependency with respect to alcohol or drugs?
I do not.
And how do you take steps to avoid something like that from happening again?
Well, if I am out drinking and have any alcohol, I always use Lyft and Uber. I would never get in a car with anyone else, and I would never drive.
Okay. All right, Mr. Chairman, no other questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Campbell. Dr. Rubin?
Dr. Rubin here. This is Dr. Rubin. Hey. So, hi, board.
Hi.
I believe that medical assistants, when approved by this board, operate under the licensure of the supervising physician. So, we licensed Dr. Vesco, whom we licensed and trusted the physician in the community. I trust that Dr. Vesco has done her professional diligence in interviewing and investigating as needed Tierney, and therefore I don't have anything to add or ask.
Thanks, Dr. Dr. Spaff.
Thank you, Dr. Rubin. Are we overseeing the medical assistant? So thank you for that clarification. I don't have anything to add either. Thank you.
Ms. Gallen.
Hi. Nothing for me to add. Listening to what other people have to say.
Okay. And Ms. Tibbetts?
No questions. Thank you.
So we'll need a motion then on her approval. Can I get one of the board members to do that?
This is Ruben. I move to approve.
You move to approve her application
for clinical training. I mean, for medical assistance. This is Dr. Ruben. My motion is that I move to approve the application for medical assistance.
Okay. I'll second that. And then roll call from Gail. Good.
Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallant?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Keep well, Elizabeth.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. You all have a good day.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. Let's move on to number 8. And this is for review, consideration, and possible action regarding the application for clinical training. This is for their clinical training. And let's go ahead and start with 8A. And I'll have Ms. Anthony give us a quick rundown on Aaron Kleinpeter.
Dr. Salik, members of the board, this is an application for Aaron Kleinpeter. This applicant is reapplying for clinical training certificate. His initial certificate expired due to non-renewal. In his non-renewal, he is now reapplying for the certificate. However, the applicant an arrest for DUI on, however, he indicated an arrest for DUI on 12-12 of 2020. Court records indicate he pleaded guilty on August 12, 2020. Applicant supplied the board with the judgment and sentencing document provided by the court. Source documents do confirm the arrest. And it is unknown if applicant has completed the court orders at this time. A request for evidence of completion has been sent to the applicant. A request for evidence of completion was sent to the applicant on 10-27-2021. And since that time, board members, I have received notice that he has complied with the ADOT education portion of that.
Thank you. Aaron, do you have any thoughts you'd like to share?
Good afternoon, board members. I recently sent the rest of my plea agreement, which I entered in August 12, 2020, to Dale. So requirements in order to fulfill this plea agreement and set this aside for my incident in December of 2020. And thus far, I mean, I completed my 36 hours of alcohol counseling, my mass victim impact panel, and my 3 days of 24-hour power confinement in the Scottsdale City Jail, which I completed this last month in October. TSS as well, the traffic survival, the ADOT requirements, my life has been reinstated. And the only two remaining requirements, I have 11 days of home detention with work release, and then just, you know, the remaining fines to fulfill this plea agreement and the compliance requirements at this point. Kind of been a bit of a task, kind of been drawn out. I actually been here for several months from the court from when it happened. And so I've just been earnestly working to kind of get everything completed and clear my name. Respect.
When do you think you'll be able to have everything completed?
I would like to, by the end. I mean, because it's obviously affects my clinical rotation this quarter. So I'd love to have this all completed by the end of the year, by December 31st. I actually have another hearing because I had to adjust the date for my home detention, the 11 days. So I have a hearing actually this Friday the 12th. So it's kind of been a bit of a task. My fiance just gave birth this past Thursday, and the whole past several months have kind of been like her primary, you know, source of support. So kind of navigating the court system in regards to my, you know, infraction of a DUI has been, you know, a bit meticulous. But we're getting it done, and I hope to have that all completed, honestly, by the end of this month. If all goes well, yeah, if they just approve my start date for the home detention on Friday.
Okay. Let me kick it to Dr. Campbell.
Okay.
good afternoon, sir. Good, thank you. And congratulations on the birth of your child.
Thank you very much.
With respect to this arrest in December, what do you think led up to that arrest? How did it come about? Was it one bad decision, or were you were you under stress and just everything started to build and this was the result, or?
Absolutely, kind of both of what you said. I accept complete accountability. But last investment on my part is a one-time occurrence, and I, do not typically and have not, had any infractions with the law, especially to this severity. I would definitely say I was under a lot of stress. I don't want to blame it on COVID and the pandemic. I had just kind of gotten back to work because I was laid off during, several months from like March to November, roughly. However, I was still in a full course load and with my rotations as well at SPNM. It was very busy that quarter for me. I would definitely say I was under a lot of stress. Not necessarily an excuse, but this is definitely a one-off thing, and it will not happen again. And I say, since then, learned a lot, through navigating the whole course scenario and taking a lot of these workshops and courses, understanding, how my decisions, not only affect myself, but, my peers, my family, and, the public as well, which was mentioned earlier. We took that oath, to protect the public. So that's, definitely opened my eyes. I accept responsibility for it. Going forward, this won't happen again. And I feel like I've absolutely made, positive changes by, the circumstances with everything going on in my life. And I plan to continue going forward doing that. And it's my last year at medical school. So I'm just really hoping that, your consideration in this matter, goes with approval and I'm able to continue and finish my last year of school so I can continue with my career.
And what coping mechanisms have you identified to be in replacement of things such as drinking as an outlet to your stress? So what have you identified things that you can do to help you cope with stress besides alcohol?
Absolutely. Coping mechanisms, kind of, some of, the basic things that I do regularly as far as, eating healthy, being mindful, a lot of, exercise, do a lot of meditation. And I think also just kind of that grounding, that foundational aspect of, reaching out to my support group, which are my family, my close friends, who are always there to support me in that sense. And, coping mechanisms as far as that goes. I mean, there's definitely absolutely much more positive outlets than resorting to alcohol or letting that affect my judgment to a point where it's unsafe. So besides, a more organized, structured thought process, other than that, just kind of keeping on with what I've been doing, which has kind of, helped me, mitigate, manage my stress, for the most part throughout my career in medical school, the past 4 years, again, healthy eating routine, diet, exercise, and just, focusing on, family time and time for myself and just kind of maintaining that balance.
And since your arrest, have you found that there's been any occasion to where you've used alcohol to help you get through stress?
Initially, after the DUI some months, I would partake, but for the most part, and the past 3 months, I have abstained from alcohol and found a much more positive outlet. And I think also the pressure and the added responsibility of my newborn daughter and the high risk pregnancy that my fiance had kind of required my attention and care in that manner, and kind of putting myself aside in a sense. And knowing that alcohol is certainly not the answer, any kind of substance or form of escape is not necessarily an answer to, being productive and, taking care of my responsibilities and my obligations and addressing that.
If you felt that at any point you were having difficulty not seeking alcohol to use for your stress, would you be willing to ask for help?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I think a lot of this process has also kind of, taught me at what point, do I need to draw the line? Will I need to ask for help? And, not being afraid to do so.
And do you feel that right now, do you feel that you are in some way dependent on alcohol to help you cope with stress?
No, sir, not at all.
And if you do go out, what steps do you take to prevent yourself from getting behind the wheel of a motor vehicle?
Primarily is, you know, not drinking. If I do plan on drinking or having anything to drink, end up definitely having a designated driver. Maintaining an SSR that I would never, hop behind the wheel, especially after, that run in, and not, be with anybody or drive with anybody who has been drinking or is intoxicated in that respect. But I guess I think also, just some foresight, if you're going to be, partaking in any kind of festivities like that or drinking, having that foresight to arrange safe transportation to and from wherever you're doing, whatever I am doing, wherever we're going in that respect.
And since this incident, have you ever found yourself when you're at school after a night of partaking, have you ever found yourself hungover while you're at school?
No, sir. I have not. I also work on the nights and weekends. So I think part of that, essentially kind of keeps me focused in that respect. So I don't have a whole lot of free time. So just, being more mindful of that. And, work school is the last place that I should be at, intoxicated or hungover in any form.
Okay. All right. Thank you for taking the time to answer those questions. Mr. Chairman, that's all I have for now.
Thank you, Dr. Campbell. Dr. Spatt, any questions?
Have you, besides this incident of DUI previously, have you had any other similar incident at all?
The birth of my first daughter, this was 2010. I was arrested for a possession of marijuana, and I had reported that was back in undergraduate. However, when I first applied for my CTC, I disclosed that to the board, and I had to appear in person, for a meeting to address that and explain myself. So, other than that, that's the only other, substance related infraction I've had with the law, and that was back in 2010.
Oh, okay, thank you. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Spath. Dr. Rubin.
Rubin here. I'm good. I thought Dr. Campbell did a great job. I have nothing to add.
Okay. And Ms. Tibbetts?
Nothing to add at this time.
And how about you, Ms. Gallen?
I don't have anything to add either.
So you think by December 31st you have completed all your obligations?
Yes, sir. Yeah, and again, hopefully much sooner. Judge, on this hearing on Friday, if I can start, my own intention is as soon as Monday and get that handled, which would kind of, technically be two business weeks, that'll be completed. And still working, still bringing in, some income. So I'll be able to, top the rest of that remaining fee off for the Scottsdale City Courts, which I'm paid until about March 2022. But obviously, I would like to clear that all out by the close of this year.
Okay. And when are you supposed to start clinic then?
We're week six in this quarter. This quarter will be finished, I believe, December 18th. So as soon as I get further news on my CTC, I would probably be entering break week shift from that December break, which is between Christmas and January, the 18th. And the 4th of January, I believe. But other than that, that would be a winter quarter specifically, which would be that first week of January when we begin.
Okay, so you feel as though you have completed your everything with City of Scottsdale by then?
Yes, sir. Hoping so, and I absolutely will. Yeah, I should. Push the date out further. Just I think it's up to me as far as this home detention date. Should it work well with the courts and the monitoring service that they work with.
Okay. Yeah, because that's probably subcontracted out. Let me ask Ms. Anthony and Mr. Larson, if we approve him, do we need to see total completion then eventually of his home monitoring?
Mr. Chair, members, I mean, the board could certainly request that information at a later date. I don't know that the board would, need to formalize anything. I guess perhaps the board could just ask if he's comfortable sending that information at the time that he, evidence of his completion at the time.
Why don't we do this then? If when you get that completed totally, can you send that to our executive director?
Yes, absolutely. I will do that. Yep, as soon as I get that completed.
Okay. And then, board members, we need to make a motion on whether we want to accept him for clinical training.
Heck yeah, this is Dr. Rubin. I would accept him for clinical training.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chair, that's a motion to approve the application.
That's a motion, Dr. Rubin.
So moved.
Okay. All right, so Dr. Rubin made the motion to accept him for clinical training. Can I get a second?
Mr. Pasquale, I second that.
Okay, then roll call,
yeah. Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
And motion carries.
Good luck, Aaron. Amazing. Thank you so much, board members. I really appreciate your consideration on this.
Stay in touch.
Okay. Yes, sir. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Move on to 8B. That's Amber Daisy, D-A-Z-Y. Can you give us a rundown on her?
Yes. Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, again, this is an application for clinical training. Applicant did disclose an affirmative answer on her application. Applicant submitted the required written supplement disclosing a 2004 DUI arrest. Source documents do not disclose this incident. Staff recommends approval of the application.
Ms. Gage, are you there?
I'm here.
Can you just give us a real brief rundown? There's quite a way to...
Yeah, it was a while ago. I was 23 at the time. It was around August of that year. I'm sorry, I don't really know the specific date because it was so long ago. I don't remember. But it was, I think, August of 2004 that I was arrested for a DUI. I did my court ordered. Georgia, at the time, at least, they made you go through like an evaluation for they did not recommend me for counseling. They found that I didn't really qualify. They didn't see that I had substance abuse issues. I did, my probation and everything, that I needed to do, and I haven't been in trouble before or since with the law. That was my one brush with the law, and that was enough for me. So.
Okay. Run through my board member list real quick. Dr. Campbell, questions?
No questions, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Okay. Dr. Spaff?
I don't have any question either. Thank you.
Dr. Rubin?
No.
Ms. Tibbetts? Ms. Tibbetts?
Sorry, I had trouble with my phone. I have no questions. Sorry about that.
Okay. And then Ms. Gallen.
No questions.
Okay. And so then would anyone like to make the motion? The motion is going to be review, basically application for clinical training.
Dr. Campbell can make a motion to approve the application for clinical training.
I'll second the motion. So we need a roll call now. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen? Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Motion carries.
Thank you, Irene. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Okay, bye.
Bye. We got AP done. Now, I guess we get to turn it over to you, Mr. Larson.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. This is a training that our office usually provides. My understanding on an annual basis. I'm not sure. When the last time this board received it. Sometimes it's give or take. But this is a just a general training. It's mostly focused on Arizona's conflict of interest statute. Which the board I know is already familiar with, but I like to parlay the training by adding some other general related matters like bias, prejudice, appearance of impropriety, ex parte communication, because I think they're all kind of in the same spirit of the conflict of interest laws, which is really just that. Board members should, as board members, you really do act as a legal tribunal, and as such, you have a responsibility to, take every case on an impartial basis and to not let any other, external factors, influence your decision making, and. I know that the board members already take all this seriously, and that I know from working with this board that these are not things that are taken lightly, but it's nevertheless always good to go through and refresh everybody and sort of go through some of the actual cases and statutes I provided the board with this memo, which is relatively detailed. The idea being that, the board can use this on an ongoing basis. And, I don't want to belabor by, reiterating everything in the memo. And I wanted to provide it ahead of time so the board members could take a look at it and come up with any questions and feel free to interrupt me at any time. And of course, after I go through, a little summary here, I'll see if anybody has any general questions, but with that, I just, there are a couple parts that I want to, parts of the memo that I want to highlight. I have these cases under the, starting with the conflicts of interest portion. I cited some of these case citations because I think they're really helpful in sort of explaining what the nature of this law is. And one of the main quotes that I really like is this one from the United. It's a U.S. Supreme Court case from 1961, U.S. v. Mississippi Valley Generating Co. It's at the top of the second paragraph of the first full paragraph of page 2 of the memo. It was obviously discussing a different. Conflict of interest statute, but it's applicable to Arizona's conflict of interest statute. And the quote is, the conflict of interest statute is thus directed not only at dishonor, but also at conduct that tempts dishonor. This broad prescription embodies a recognition of the fact that an impairment of impartial judgment can occur in even the most well-meaning people when their personal economic interests are affected by the business they transact on behalf of the government, end quote. And the reason I highlight that quote is because it sort of is a good lead in to the actual Arizona conflict of interest statute, which I cite right below there. It's ARS 38-503. I won't quote the language. I know the board is already familiar with the statute, and it's quoted right there in the memo. But, one of the things to highlight that I think is sort of borne out by that case quotation is that, it doesn't really matter if a board member has some sort of pecuniary interest in a case, it doesn't really matter if the board, if that would actually affect the board member's ability to review the case. It might be, you could even foresee a situation where a board member has a pecuniary interest in something and doesn't even realize it. But the statute doesn't really discriminate on that. The statute says if you have a pecuniary interest or a substantial interest in some way, as defined in the statute, then you must recuse yourself from the case. And, that goes to that case quotation about, it's directed not only at dishonor, but conduct that tempts dishonor. Even if you're well-meaning, even if you don't even realize that you have some sort of pecuniary interest, that statute still comes into play. And so that's an important thing to highlight with regard to the conflict of interest. And so, I highlighted some key points there about the statute. Substantial interest means any non-speculative pecuniary or proprietary interest, either direct or indirect. So that's pretty broad. Relative is also pretty broad. You see the spouse, child, child's child, parent, grandparent, brother, sister of the whole or half blood, and their spouses and the parent, brother, sister, or child of a spouse. So again, it's a very broad reaching definition and a broad reaching statute. And, it's something to keep in mind in every single case. If you have an interest in something that falls within these very broad definitions, then you have to disqualify yourself, or in other words, recuse yourself from the case. Once you're recused, you can't communicate with anyone involved in the decision-making process or anything like that. You're just out. And there was a practical point here I wanted to highlight that, if you are going to recuse yourself, it's important to state that out loud on the record during the open meeting. It's best practice, this is mostly for, if we're in person. I know we've been telephonic recently, so it doesn't apply. But if you are in person, it's usually best practice to actually leave the board table and return when the case comes back. I mean, it's not absolutely necessary, but it's just, it's a better look. There's also a requirement that any conflicts of interest have to be noted in the board's official records. I know the board has forms on this. Gail, correct me if I'm wrong. There are conflict of interest forms. So if you're going to recuse yourself for a conflict of interest, I would reach out to Gail and see if you could get one of those forms to fill out, and she can then keep that in the written records. The other way that the board could do that is by just stating on the record in the open meeting what your conflict is and why you're recusing from the case, and then Gail would note that in the minutes, and that would also qualify as a written record. So either of those would meet that requirement, and otherwise, just take a look at the consequences for violating the conflict of interest law, which can really be quite serious. I noted those in the memo and put some of the statutory citations to the extent anyone's interested. So, I mean, that's pretty much all I'll say with regard to the conflict of interest portion. And I guess I'll stop here and see if anybody has any questions on that part. No takers. Okay, then I'll just move on to bias, prejudice, and predetermination. This is where we get into the areas that are a little bit more subjective, right? You know, with conflicts of interest, we're talking about actual discernible interests in something that comes before the board, like a pecuniary interest. But, you know, with bias, prejudice, and predetermination, these are things that, ultimately just prevent a board member from deciding a matter on the basis of its own circumstances. So any sort of bias for either in favor or against somebody, or, you know, so you can have prejudice, which is, you know, sort of you've had some sort of issue with somebody in the past or something like that, that might make you prejudge the case. And, you know, anything that would lead you to, you know, sort of prejudge a case before you've actually viewed the merits. That is what we're talking about here with bias, prejudice, and predetermination. And again, it's a very subjective thing. You know, it's really a question for you and you alone to answer. You know, is this, hey, here's somebody I've seen in the past, here's somebody who I have dealt with in the past, and does that experience, you know, in some way or another make me not view this case in a part, you know, not able to be impartial in this case? And, you know, usually that's really only something you can answer. And it's something that, you know, I certainly encourage the board members to err on the side of caution, that, you know, if you feel that there's any way in which, you know, something might make you prejudge a case or a matter before the board, that, you know, you recuse yourself and state on the record, or, you know, even if not, you know, at least state on the record, hey, I know this person, I've dealt with them in the past, I don't think that it does not affect my ability. I just wanted to note it for the record. You know, that's another way that somebody could go about it. Ex parte communication. You know, this is always fun because I like to break out Latin terms whenever I can, because it makes me feel like lawyerly. but the ex parte communication is just, you know, oral written communication between a decision maker and one party to a proceeding in the absence of the other party. So, you know, you can think of the best example of this is a judge having a conversation with the plaintiff or the plaintiff's lawyer, where the defendant or the defendant's lawyer is not there at the same time. And that's, you know, they're very improper. And, you know, they lead to a sort of presupposition that you're not impartial, because you've been apprised of some information from one side that the other side wasn't aware of. And that's, it's, you know, sort of generally unfair, and it's presumed to be, remove the impartiality of whoever makes the ex parte communications. And so, you know, that's a very straightforward thing. You know, don't discuss any matters before the board, you know, with one party without the other party. And I know the board, you know, just based on the way this board works, that generally wouldn't happen anyway. But, you know, and, you know, this training isn't on open meeting law. That's sort of a separate thing, but, you know, that you shouldn't really be discussing anything about cases with anybody outside of the open meeting in the first place. So it's really sort of a FYI point. The last, you know, I'll talk about appearance of impropriety. Again, this is a more subjective thing, you know, and this is one of those where you might, and I used a nice case quote here to illustrate this from the Arizona case that I cited. It's at the in the first full paragraph of page 6. Quote, even where there is no actual bias, justice must appear fair. end quote. And that can sound, you know, that can sound to be a little bit stringent, but at the end of the day, you know, if you're on the other side of a case, of a board case, you're a respondent, you know, you know that a board member, for example, has some sort of experience with you in the past or something, but they're still sitting here, you know, working on the matter, you know, it can, even if that board member feels in their own mind subjectively, like, hey, that doesn't affect my ability to judge this case. It still might look that way. And that can cause problems on appeal. It can cause, people will raise that issue and on appeal from board decisions. And it can just generally make the proceedings look unfair. And so I guess the big takeaway there is that the board needs to keep the optics of every situation in mind. And, you know, like I suggested earlier, like, you know, if a board member has some sort of prior experience with somebody and that comes before the board, and they know in their mind that isn't going to affect their ability to be impartial in the case, it might in some circumstances make sense just to at least say on the record, hey, I know this person, I've, you know, dealt with them in the past, but that does not affect my ability to be impartial in this case, and it's not going to affect it, and I'm going to continue participating. You know, I think that's one way of, you know, sort of being above board and being straight up about it and avoiding the appearance of impropriety. And so that's, you know, I'll leave that there. And I guess I had this little paragraph at the end, you know, that sort of ties everything together. You know, we started with the conflict of interest statutes, which are very specific and mandate recusal in certain situations. And then we moved into the more subjective components like bias, prejudice, and all of that. But, you know, the common thread is that the board is supposed to decide each of these cases on their own merits and on that alone. You know, no other external factors should be coming into play. And, you know, again, I use this quote from the U.S. Supreme Court that, you know, states members of state regulatory agencies, quote, are assumed to be men and women of conscience and intellectual discipline, capable of judging a particular controversy fairly on the basis of its own circumstances, end quote. And so all the things that we've, you know, discussed in my memo and in this training are all fall under that same umbrella of things that, you know, affect the board's ability to judge a particular case fairly on the basis of its own circumstances. And so, you know, to the extent we can avoid all these things and make sure that we're complying with the laws, that's really all this is about. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions during the meeting. I'm also always available. My information is in the memo. You can feel free to shoot me questions via email. You can give me a call, and I'm happy to chat through anything with you. But yeah, and again, happy to answer any questions here if anybody has any. Is everybody there, or
did we lose you?
Did I put everyone asleep?
Sounds like.
No, you explained everything very well. We appreciate the training. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for your objectivity. I appreciate it. Anything else, any board members? Okay. Thank you.
Of course.
Let's move on to item number 10, future agenda items. Anyone have anything that they want to put on the agenda in the future?
Okay, then let's move on to number 11, call to the public. Call to the public for 5 minutes. Is there anyone there that'd like to address the board? Going once, twice, nobody? Okay. I got 312, and if no one has any other questions, then we can adjourn the meeting. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Okay.